on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush Ohlone community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples.
Thank you. For any members of the public that are listening in, the public comment call-in number is 415-655-0001. Access code is 2661-676-2933. To raise your hand for public comment on a specific agenda item, press star 3 when prompted by the meeting moderator. And the WebEx webinar password is 1217. Next, we have item 2, President's opening remarks.
Good morning, fellow commissioners, Director Reardon, members of the public. I first want to thank all the stakeholders that came out to the Commission Streamlining Task Force. It was wonderful to hear from so many tenant advocates, from tenants, from industry groups, from unions, just about the important role that the BIC plays, that the CAC plays, and the AAB plays. And the current recommendation from the task force is to keep the powers within these committees, and so I'm just really grateful for everyone who came out and for my fellow commissioners. And shout out to Vice President Meng, who's not here but did a great job also representing the commission and in our meeting with Chair Harrington as well. As helping me write the letter that we all authorized last time. So thank you. And I also want to commend the staff leadership on a fantastic all-hands meeting. It was really nice to attend and to hear all the accomplishments that the staff have made this year and kind of where we're going in the direction, just really celebrate the great work that DBI has been doing. So congratulations on that. And I also want to welcome the Permit SF team. We'll be hearing that as an agenda item today, but this has been a project decades in the making. We're so excited to make this, you know, do our part to make this a success, and so we're really grateful that you are here so early in the process. So thank you for that. And that concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Is there any public comment on the President's opening remarks? Okay, seeing none, general public comment. The BIC will take public comment on matters within the commission's jurisdiction that are not part of this agenda. No general public comment and none remotely. Okay, then next we have item 4, discussion regarding objectives and deliverables for the Permit SF Technology Modernization Project.
Thanks so much. Do we have the slides?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, so let's go to the next page. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Florence, director of the Mayor's Office of Innovation. On behalf of the Mayor's Office, my team managed the selection process for permitting software and is now supporting the implementation for that software. What we have for you today is a short presentation. First, Director Reardon is going to talk about some of the pain points on permitting that we have faced over the last decades. Next, we have Elizabeth Waddy, the head of Permit SF, who's going to share more on the vision that we are building and what customers and staff can expect to see starting in early 2026. Next, we actually have a demo for you. Darcy Bender from our digital services team, as well as the OpenGov team, is going to actually show you the look and feel of this product and what you can expect. Please, please, please give us your constructive feedback. Please, please, please share your thoughts. What we are here to do is start a dialogue with you on how to make this project successful for everyone, and we are so happy to be here. So with that, I will turn it to Director Reardon.
Good Good morning, President Alexander Tuve and members of the Building Inspection Commission. I'm Patrick O'Riordan, Director of the Department of Building Inspection. Since 2020, DBI has focused on improving our operations to reduce permit review and issuance times. I'm proud of the progress we've made, and I'm confident that we're on the right track. Over the past year, Permit SF has had great success in addressing permit applicant headaches and bringing all permitting departments together to solve big challenges. From reforming how the city evaluates hillside construction to making it easier to put candles on a table in a restaurant, we're making it easier to do business and build in San Francisco. But our work isn't done. In fact, we're at the beginning stages of addressing our greatest issue and largest obstacle to further improvement, the city's long outdated permit tracking system, which is difficult for both our customers and our staff. Permit applicants and property owners are frequently frustrated. The customer interface is more than 20 years old, confusing, and unnecessarily complicated. City departments issue comments separately instead of sending comprehensive comments from all the reviewing departments. It's hard to track projects to know when permits will expire. Many permits have to be filed or paid for in person at 49 South Van Ness. There are no user accounts for property owners or applicants, which means you can save your information for further applications. If you don't finish in one sitting, you have a challenge there. Staff feel the old system holds us back unnecessarily. The current technology relies on manual processes, no built-in communication tools, and there are no flags for permit expirations or deadlines. There are no overarching workflow or management tools to coordinate project review, processing, and assignment between departments. Most critically, the technology is no longer supported by Oracle. These are the main issues with our current system, and I'm very hopeful the new OpenGov system will address these challenges. Thank you, and now I'll turn it over to my colleagues with Permit SF.
Thank you, Patrick. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for having us. Just take a quick second to introduce myself. Today, I am here wearing the hat of the director of Permit SF, Mayor Lurie's initiative to improve the permitting process across the city, not just at a DBI, but citywide. Also worth noting, I wear another hat during my day job. I'm also the director of current planning for the planning department. So that's our permitting side of house over at planning. And I've been there for 20 years. I think an important note why I want to share that is I have seen a lot of the process improvements and permitting efforts that we as a city and collectively with DBI have embarked on over those last two decades. I also come with the privilege of having some lessons learned from when we implemented the Accela project back in 2014. So I think Patrick's been around for a long time. I've been around for a long time. We are all bringing our lessons learned, our pain points to this project to make sure that as we move forward, we don't make those same mistakes of the past and we take those lessons moving forward. So with that, I'll hop in to a little bit more about the project. I'm going to try to keep it quick so we can get to the meat of the actual presentation. So continuing, as Patrick was saying, sort of the problem we're really trying to solve for here, and I know I'm sure I'm speaking to the choir here, but the pain points that our customers and our staff are experiencing, they're not unique to DBI. They really do extend across permitting throughout the system. Customers in the city don't know how to apply for a permit and get their project approved. Most citizens in San Francisco and business owners don't really know the difference between DBI and planning and public works. And if you don't know, if you haven't sort of been in the industry and done this for a living, you often get lost. And one of the prime goals, I think, of Permit SF as a whole is really thinking about the little guy, our small business owner, our homeowner who may only interact with the city once in their entire career or life, and how can we make it so that they feel that they don't have to hire an expediter to get their work done, that they have access to the information. Again, technology is a great place where we can support that. a lot of our customers feel like once they do figure out how to submit that their application's fallen into a black hole. There's no, you know, Domino's pizza tracker telling them that we've received their application even, or knowing what the next steps are coming up. One of the biggest things that I've heard from folks over the years is, although people would love things to go really fast, the most important thing is predictability of how long will this take and do they have certainty in what information they're being provided. As much as we've made a ton of process improvements over the last several years, big thanks to Patrick and his leadership, particularly since 2020, there's still so many inefficiencies that just our antiquated technology leads to, that slows down our processes, that there's just no way to sort of overcorrect for some of the inefficiencies in our antiquated software. And at the end of the day, it's not getting any better. We are constantly being asked to make upgrades to the system. New laws are passed, new processes are in place, new expectations around transparency or performance metrics are being asked of us. The current system, adding a checkbox is hard. Sometimes we get the threat of this might break the system if we add one more box. This is not a tool that helps us do our work better. Next slide, please. If we can go to the next slide. I know there's a delay sometimes. There we go. So we're trying to solve for all of those pain points. We are hoping to produce, or we are not hoping, we are producing a centralized online intake portal for permits. So one of the things that you'll see is a central landing page effectively for customers. We'll walk through how we see this evolving. But again, this goes to the point of people don't necessarily know one agency for another. So let's have one landing place, and then we can help guide customers based on how they answer some dynamic questions. We want to give customers a real-time status tracker so they know where they are and they know what to expect is coming next. We want the processes to be integrated. We know that as much as, you know, I think historically we've really thought about the planning department thinks about our processes, DBI thinks about their processes, Public Works. At the end of the day, we need to start thinking about this from the customer's experience. The customer is trying to build a building, trying to produce housing. They need to get an approval from planning. They need one from DBI. They need one from fire. They need Public Works. But they just need A to Z being complete, and they need those processes to happen seamlessly without, again, needing to navigate each of those touch points. Technology can help us with that and making sure that those through threads can continue on so folks don't need to resubmit their name and their application four different times and submit to the city four different sets of the same information. The system should be able to carry some of these sort of common truths all the way through. And lastly, and this is so much front and center with the work that we're doing today, but what the public is expecting of us, dashboards and data that can drive accountability and transparency. Right now, it is really difficult. And again, big props to Patrick's staff who try to make dashboards that can actually advise folks, but it is really tough to do within the current system. We want to be able to be more nimble, provide different ways that we can slice and dice data, analyze it differently, and then pivot how we are actually operating as an agency in response to that data. Right now, we just frankly don't have the tools to manage staff and change our processes with informed data. So we're really excited about that. Next slide. Jumping into what to expect coming next. Right now we are working in what we're calling phase one of the OpenGov software project. So that's the software tool that we're using. Within phase one, we wanted to bite off a manageable slice of our permitting world, but we also knew that this was going to be very hard. The first sort of attempt to deliver is always the hardest. And so we also wanted to be realistic. We knew that in this first phase, we were really going to have to deal with some prickly back-end type of issues, things that aren't the big, you know, sexy permitting accomplishments, but are the things that carry through on all permit types, things like figuring out addressing, things like that that don't sound that interesting are a really important part to get right in order to facilitate people filing applications, figuring out how to do digital online payment processing with all of the city's financial rules and audit controls. All of those things are really necessary for any permit type, but we knew on this first tranche, we were going to have to dig into those and solve those. And once we solve them once, we're not going to have to revisit them, so they'll carry through. So we wanted to bite off permit typologies that in and of themselves were impactful for customers, so really focusing on, again, kind of the little guy, our biggest bang for our buck in terms of customers who need the most help from the city, and then a significant enough volume that staff will feel the change, but easy enough workflows that we don't, you know, we know we can be successful in sort of biting off this first. So those were sort of the three goals that we had for this first. So within that, where we landed is some over-the-counter permits, specifically window, doors, siding, re-roofing permit, replacement permits. Within the fire department, and they've been an incredible partner on this, fire sprinkler and alarm permits, fire operational permits as well. So this is really going to take the vast majority of the fire department's permitting, which they are also on a very antiquated Oracle permitting system that doesn't support them well at all. Sign permits. Moving the what are currently known as the instant online trade permits into the new software, and then a front door, sort of the beginning of looking at special events. And this is something that probably comes less so to the Building Inspection Commission, but one of the things that we're really thinking about is what really makes, as part of our economic recovery in San Francisco, what makes San Francisco really special. And one of the things that I think is so unique about San Francisco as compared to the rest of the Bay Area is we should be this like cultural hub for events and activation and activity. Right now, the permitting process to host events is very difficult, super challenging. No one knows where to start. And so we're biting that off as part of Permit SF. And our first stage, and where there's integration into the OpenGov software project, is that we're creating that front door so that somebody can just tell us what event they want and we're going to start guiding them. So we're not yet ready to replace the back-end systems for executing all of those permits, but we're at least guiding people through dynamic questions of where they need to go and navigate for special events. We will move on. Next slide, please. So a couple things that I just wanted to touch on really quickly of you know, this opportunity to really improve our data quality and business processes. I just mentioned addressing. Again, I'm not going to bore you with all the details, but I can tell you this is a nut to crack. We're cracking it. We've made really great progress, and we're excited that we'll be able to solve this problem that honestly has been a multiple year-long conversation that we have not otherwise been able to solve around getting a consistent address system for the city. Next. Standardizing inspection scheduling. Little things like this, but these are the things that I think add up to good government. Right now, we have a lot of different shops that do inspections across the city, both in DBI, fire, public works. Everyone does it differently. This is an opportunity for us to really standardize it. I think the more that we standardize, understanding the uniquenesses of each trade and each department, the greater opportunities for transparency and predictability for customers, and opportunities for us to learn from each other on what's going well. It's been actually really exciting sitting in the room with some of our inspectors who often don't sit in the same room together, for them to share what's working really well for their teams and what are pinch points for other teams, and they're able to see and sort of learn from one another of some best practices. Next, please. We are doing things like linking occupancy and uses. Again, this is a really wonky thing, but these are things that will help our customers who may not from the get-go know what their building use is or occupancy or the last legal use. And when they don't know, they often guess. They often put the wrong information on an application. That causes delays or issues down the line that I'm sure the BIC has seen, where permits get suspended because they've been issued an error. And if you pull that thread all the way back, why was it issued an error? Oftentimes it's from erroneous information being put on the application in the first place. So what can we do to reduce that, the likelihood of inaccurate information being submitted on day one, to drive better outcomes ultimately for the city? Next. Again, we can kind of plow through this, but we are, a lot of the questions that we ask right now on our applications are just really confusing. And a lot of people who are not in the industry don't know how to answer the questions appropriately. And so we're, again, looking at ways that we can automate information based on data that we in the city already possess, rather than putting that obligation on an applicant. Next. Audit logs. This is a really important one for us. And I know I'm preaching to the choir on this one, too. Transparency, transparency, transparency. We need to make sure that everything we're doing has a very detailed audit log. What's so exciting about the tool that we'll be showing you is there is down to a click-based audit log. There's the ability for us to pull data on every single action that has happened on a project. What we're also doing, though, is we're building in some of the things that we know are weaknesses in the current system and that we've seen as being problematic. We're just building that into the system from the get-go so that the right kinds of questions are asked, the right kinds of actions must, sort of order of operations. So if you think about inspections, one of the things we've most recently been discussing is we don't want folks just jumping to final. We want to sort of show your math. We want to see how a project has actually progressed in the field. So there's documentation of how did we get to a final if it needed three steps in the meantime. And so we're really working through, working with Matt Green, working with Patrick, around what are some of these best practices that we know we should always have for certain types of projects. We're going to build that in. Any deviation is either not allowed because we're building that in, or if it is made, we're able to see that, again, granular level audit trail. So I think that is something we're really excited about. Next, please. And we can just keep going. We've kind of talked through all of this. I want to save some time here. Next slide. All right. So what we're really hoping is sort of the outcome of this, if we think about sort of the three guiding principles that we hope to take away. And there's so much detail. We could spend so much time going into all of these. And hopefully you'll have us back when we're ready to go live, is that at the end of the day, this project will result in improved transparency. It will deliver best-in-class customer service. This is one of the things that, to me, is so important. I remember sitting at the public counter at the planning department when we were back at 1660 and having people come in on their lunch break who are working down the block in the tech industry, world-class tech companies that we host in this city, and sort of the embarrassment of telling somebody to go, you know, fill out the pink form is the one you need to fill out, you know, and asking if they could fill things out online and not being able to say yes, not having the type of contemporary software in San Francisco that a world-class tech-leading city should have. So really being able to be best in class and be a leader moving forward in the permitting space is something I'm so excited about. And lastly, streamlining the staff experience and improving staff satisfaction. It is really annoying when your permit tracking system crashes on you if you walk away from your desk for 15 minutes, which is what our current system does. You have to restart the system if you're not actively in it. Training people that you have to use the F7 and F8 button in order to execute queries in the tracking system when you're training somebody who's, you know, new right out of college and they've never used an F7 or F8 button, it's really embarrassing. Getting away from that is no fun for staff. It doesn't let them sort of use their brain in the way that they were hired. So how can we give staff a software tool that they're used to using in their personal lives and have it be just as easy for them to execute their job is also a really big milestone that we're looking forward to. So with that, this is my last slide before I turn it over. We are right now moving at light speed. We are in the build, test, and improve stage. So we are on those scopes that I was sharing with you. The first of those are going to go live in February. So we're working to finalize the building of that. Come January, we've got a robust training program and testing program for staff. And then our goal is starting in mid-February. We're going to start launching the first round of our products with sort of the second tranche coming live in April. So with that, I'd love to turn it over to my colleague, Darcy from Digital Services, who's going to walk you through a demo. We're going to first see basically a one-minute overview of the system, and then Darcy's going to actually jump into a live San Francisco-specific record that we've already built, so you can see an example of that. Thank you.
Thanks, Liz, and thanks, commissioners, for having us. My name is Darcy Bender. I'm with the Digital Services team at the City Administrator's Office, and I'm here with Caitlin Martin-Contreras from OpenGov, who's been helping also with the implementation. So like Liz mentioned, we're going to start off with a brief video, and then we'll jump into the live demo where Caitlin will click through and I'll narrate. I'm not sure if the audio is working on the video.
SFGov, is this something you can assist with?
Maybe go ahead and try again, Caitlin, see if that works.
The public
yes.
PC. I did. Did you hit play?
Today I'm going to walk you through OpenGov's permitting and licensing solution.
Okay.
We're going to start in the public portal. You can think of the public portal as a single front door or single point of entry for all permitting licensing activity with the city. It allows us to bring together applications from all your departments and divisions into a single location for applicants to apply for permits for planning, the Department of Building Inspection, express permits, Public Works Department, Recreation and Parks, Public Utilities, and even the San Francisco Port. We use a public portal to guide applicants through the application process with the goal of submitting complete and accurate applications to staff. Moving over to the staff side of the software, once the application is submitted, staff is going to see everything they need to review and approve this permit in a single location. So all the information that was entered in by the applicant is going to come directly into the details section. We map out and then automate the workflow for staff to work through. We provide the attachments that are uploaded as part of this application. We connect directly to the city's enterprise addressing system to provide a unified location. We have information about the applicant in which we can flag the applicant if they're a member on the expanded compliance control program or not. And we also provide a click-by-click audit log of everything that happens on the record from beginning to end. Within the workflow itself, we can bring in reviewers from various departments and divisions in a single location, which drives efficiency and a streamlined process for staff and, more importantly, for applicants. Speaking of transparency, once the applicant submits, we're going to map out the workflow from beginning to end on the public portal for the applicant. As staff completes a review and approval, this list is going to update in real time, so staff is going to, or applicants are going to see exactly where they're at throughout the process. Anytime there's actions required of the applicant, they'll receive a notification. Otherwise, they can get a quick glimpse of seeing where they're at in the process and what's yet to come. Finally, taking transparency a step further, we can take all the data that we're generating in the system and start to present this information out to the public. We can see the number of permits issued or processed by year, permit revenues, etc., as well as permit breakdown by type, location. Thank you for watching this demonstration. We look forward to working with you.
Great. So that was a brief overview, high level, showing all of the different features. Now, Caitlin and I will go through an example of a door, siding, window replacement permit. You can see here on the landing page, we've got key information for the applicant about what will be upcoming in the application and what sorts of materials they should prepare before they begin. We've got one already pulled up here so that we don't have to watch Caitlin typing everything in. But you can see that it pre-fills information about Caitlin using her user profile. So that way, some information that we know about the user doesn't have to be entered on every single application. But it can always be edited if it's different on a project-by-project basis. And the email that's listed here is where all of those notifications will be sent to. As we mentioned before, the address lookup here is actually linked directly to the enterprise address system. So this means that we staff can be sure that the address that the applicant chooses is actually already approved and in our system. The applicant will not be able to choose an address that doesn't currently exist, and they're given instructions in case they can't find their address as to how to get their address approved and added. That also is able to pull in additional information about the parcel and the address that we'll show you on the staff side of things. We also can use, in a digital form, conditional questions. So that way, we can only show questions that are relevant to that applicant based on information they've given us. So for example, here, if you select that your role is an architect, we're going to follow up with a question about your license number. But if you choose one of the other roles, like property owner or contractor, we don't need your license number. So this is a dynamic and interactive tool. We're also currently asking property information. You can see the very first question there is asking, because we know that this is a historic property that we've selected, it's asking if they have the planning approval letter already. If the property you selected is not historic, that question won't show. And then you can also see that we have help text available. So for example, we know that the building construction type is a piece of information that people get confused by and don't know what the right option is. And we can link directly to a page that gives the applicant more detail about exactly what each type is, so that way they can more successfully choose what their building construction type is the first time. And that eliminates the back and forth with staff that will need to happen later on to correct if they put the wrong information. And then you can also see that we can mark which fields are required and which ones are optional, so you can't move forward in the form until you've answered all of the required questions. We can also ask specific follow-up questions based on the scope of work that people have told us. So here you can see we're asking about, are you doing doors, are you doing windows? And based on the selections there, we'll have more detailed follow-up questions. So we've been working with staff at DBI and planning to understand what is the most pertinent information you need for each of these types of projects. And we can, instead of just relying on an open-ended scope of work field to for the applicant to guess what sort of information we need, we can start to ask very specific guided questions to make sure that they're telling us everything up front. So this is where you can see the more detailed information specifically on windows, because that was the scope of this. We also have a page that would show if you selected door, would ask a more detailed follow-up questions specifically for doors. And also some of these questions are actually driving automated workflows on the back end. And so, for example, if you say that, some of the questions about whether this is for a storefront could change the routing on the back end, which is currently being done by human decision, can now be automated based on the questions that are provided in the form. And this is also where we've been working with, like I mentioned, DBI and planning to understand what is all of the pertinent information that you need. So we're, asking materials and dimensions and everything that's needed for a window project. We also, similar to the address lookup or autofill feature, we also have a contractor lookup. So this is ensuring that the contractors that are named in the application are currently and active with the state license board. We can also pull in certain information like their license type. For certain types of permits, we can block somebody from continuing if their contractor doesn't have the right license type, or if their workers' comp information isn't up to date. So we can sort of block those types of applications from even being able to submit until they've resolved whatever issues they have. And we also have this connected to the DBI database of checking for insufficient funds. So that's could be not necessarily a blocker, but something that would be flagged for staff to make sure that the contractor resolves that before we can move forward to issuance with this permit. We also have the important notices language here, and just want to call out that at the very bottom, we have more detailed, specific call-outs for certain scopes. So again, because this is a window, we have certain notices that are just for window projects. We have other notices for siding, et cetera. So we can customize what the notification information is on this final page. And then lastly, we have an opportunity to upload attachments. This is a no plans permit, so the plan set isn't required, but there's other types of documents that people can upload that could be helpful for the review process. And then in this instance, because it was a historic property, this is where they would upload their planning approval letter. And they can there's these kind of preset categories, but if somebody has a type of document that doesn't fall into one of those categories, they can always add any other sort of attachment they want to. And then finally, you are able to have a chance to take a look at everything that you answered in all of the previous fields and go back and edit anything before you finally hit submit. And it is also worth noting that you can, at any point in this, save your progress, and all of the progress that you've made thus far will be available in OpenGov the next time that you log in. So if you come across something of, oh, I'm not sure my contractor's license number, or some piece of information that you need to go get first, you can always save your progress and come back to it at a later time. After the submission, you'll be taken to a page that we'll show you all of the steps that are going to be needed for this type of review. So you can see that based on the answers that Caitlin gave here, we actually don't need the building inspection plan reviewers. It's a simple enough, straightforward enough project that it needs planning approval because of the fact that it's historic. It will always go through the intake permit tech team to check that all of the information is correct. And yeah, you can kind of see on the left-hand side, as each step is activated, it'll move from the blue play button. And then once it's completed, it will turn into a green check mark. So at any point in time, an applicant can log into OpenGov and see exactly where they're at in the process and exactly which steps are still upcoming. They also have the option to message whomever is assigned to that specific step. And so they can give a direct message to the person that's doing intake or to the person that's doing the planning review, and it'll go directly to the person that's assigned to that task. And then we'll just show really quick, Caitlin's got a different permit that's ready for inspections. So we'll show you the process of requesting an inspection. So she would have gotten a notification saying, once you're ready for inspections, go ahead and request here. And this looks like she's ready for the final inspection here. She can request a specific day and time. She can add a different contact other than herself if she won't be the one that'll be on site that day that the inspector will need to contact. So she can either add another person as a guest if they have an OpenGov account, or she can enter in other contact information. And again, the staff and the applicant can send each other messages regarding this inspection through the portal as well. So now switching over to the staff side, this is sort of the landing page for staff. The kind of homepage, I would say, is a personalized task list. So you can see on the left-hand side, these are all of the different permit steps that are currently assigned to Caitlin. And she can kind of scan through and look through the details of each one and decide which project she'll be working on first. And this is sort of all of the information that you might need about a specific record. So it starts off here on the workflow side. You can see on the left-hand side a list of the steps. So this is a case of a doors, windows, siding replacement that does go through the intake review, the building approval, and the planning approval. And so staff from the DBI, as well as staff from planning, will be reviewing these all within the same system. And they're able to communicate with each other using the internal messaging system. On the details tab, you can see all of the information that was submitted by the applicant. So all of those questions that Caitlin answered, all of her answers will be here. We also have some internal only staff fields. So after the intake team does their review, they can check or uncheck or add certain information. And all of that is also sometimes driving fee calculations, or sometimes is just informational for future staff that are doing review. You can also see that there is a payment screen. So as I mentioned, some of the fields that are entered in by staff, but also based on other information that were provided by the applicant, we are automatically calculating the total fees. And those can be paid for online through the customer portal using credit card. But if they prefer, they can also come in person. We'll have this connected to the kiosk, so they can pay with cash through the kiosk or also in person with staff. And then also just wanted to call out, we mentioned before that there will be a flag for anybody in an app that's associated with an application that is on the expanded compliance control program list. There will be a flag or a notification here for staff. And so I noted that the workflow is sort of automated, but in any individual circumstance where we want to override what was automatically set as the workflow, staff have the opportunity to go ahead and add workflow steps or assign it to different people based on different factors like being on the ECC list. So now we'll jump into what it looks like as an inspector. So this is an example of Caitlin's now an inspector, taking a look at all of the inspections that are scheduled for this day. This is probably an unrealistic example because hopefully they would all be in one district and not spread out all across the city. But here you can see that Caitlin has the option to sort of reorder the inspections based on what route makes the most sense. And all of that can be automated, or also she can drag and drop and build her own ordering. And then also through here, she can make any edits to the application, or sorry, to the inspection requests. So go ahead and look at the details there. And if there's you know, any edits that she wants to make before going out, or any messages she wants to send to the customer, that's possible. And then finally, there's the kind of internal staff-facing reporting. So it's really, there are some kind of pre-made reports that are within OpenGov, but it's also possible to take a look at the information. Maybe this is most useful for managers, let's just say, and use filters to build reports on the fly. So if they, you know, a certain person is going to be out sick, and we can just very easily filter the list of all of the tasks that are assigned for my team to just being, you know, which ones are assigned to Elaine in this case. And let's go ahead and reassign all of those to somebody else, choose a new assignee. And we don't have to click into each one individually and reassign them. We can kind of do a bulk reassign at that level. So that's sort of a high-level overview of all of the different features. We didn't go super in-depth, but hopefully that gives you a taste of what the product looks like and how it will be implemented. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was just going to say that wraps our presentation, and we've got a whole team here happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll have public comment first.
So I had wanted to actually do an introduction to this item.
Oh, sure.
Can I just kind of do that and then we do public comment?
Okay, yeah,
great.
Sure.
So I'm so excited you guys are here. This is actually the second presentation that we've received from Permit SF, right? We had the kind of, you know, I guess in the spring or early summer, time is a funny thing, we had the kind of look ahead. And so it's great to have you guys now back with this kind of presentation before you go live in January. That is unbelievable. I know that there's a lot of questions that have been raised about OpenGov, and I encourage folks to go to the Board of Supervisors hearing where they're going to talk about the procurement process. We have a very small window and an opportunity to really dive into this into the meat of Permit SF and to really give influence before it goes live on the things that are the meat before the BIC. And I just want to just really encourage that, you know, us this is our opportunity to give as much feedback now before it goes live, and so not to give up that opportunity. So please ask your questions, give your feedback, and I hope this is a rich discussion. And folks who are watching remotely, if you have questions or comments, we really welcome your feedback.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, and you're ready?
Yes. Okay. I have some handouts, please.
Okay.
Sonia, thank you. You're welcome. Okay, Sonia, I'm ready.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Drantler. Will Permit SF fix the current internal control weaknesses in the permit tracking system, PTS? Will building permits auto-expire like plumbing permits? Approximately 32% of the building permits issued between 2013 and 2025 have never been finaled or expired in PTS. These 133,352 building permits were in issued status in PTS in June of 2025. It would be really interesting to see how they are going to be migrated into the new system. Only 6,401 building permits of the 414,939 permits issued between 2013 and 2025 have expired status in PTS. This is slightly more than the 5,570 building permits that were withdrawn. Only 67 of the 24,913 building permits issued in 2024 have expired status. This is a schedule that shows all those numbers. I won't go through that. Will Permit SF improve compliance under Building Code Section 106A.4.4? Will Permit SF implement: 1, tighter controls over the issuance of building permit extensions, prevent the issuance of extensions to expired permits, limit extensions to the maximum number of days in the building code; 2, tighten controls over the issuance and extension of temporary occupancy certificates, limit the issuance of TCOs and TCO extensions to 12 months; 3, tighten controls over the issuance of recommencement permits, ensure the original permit has been expired for less than 12 months. Next slide. Will Permit SF implement system controls to prevent improper DBI inspection practices? Will Permit SF prevent unscheduled DBI inspections, eliminate inspections on expired building permits or finaling expired building permits, eliminate the alteration of locked PTS database records, permit and complaint records? And I would call out here, altering public records is definitely illegal. Require additional approvals for scheduling out-of-district inspections. Prevent inspections performed by senior building inspectors, and prevent the issuance of $1 administrative permits to final expired building permits that are null and void. This is an opportunity to address all these control weaknesses that have enabled the corruption history at the Department of Building Inspection. And if this is not addressed, I mean, it failed 12 years ago. Let's hope it doesn't fail again. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any additional public comment? And there's none remotely. Commissioners? Comments or questions from any of the commissioners?
Mr. McLeese?
This might be nuanced, but I was just curious, how does it interface with an iPhone or iPad for the inspectors? I mean, that's a great feature, but when they're out in the field, and maybe they can't use their phones, but I mean, we take so many, I always take pictures with my phone, and we're uploading them directly into our system through that. It's just such an easy device, and I'm curious, do they have that ability?
Yes, there's an app for OpenGov that we expect the inspectors to use in the field, and it does allow the ability to upload photos or other file types directly from your device to be attached to an inspection record.
Okay. Jerry, you're sharing screen with everybody.
Okay. 1 second. Yeah, just 1 second.
Okay. Commissioner Palamucci.
Thank you, and thank you all for coming to this. I think this is really exciting. I have questions about the license contractor page that was demonstrated, and I guess like how the a large interest of mine is ensuring contractor compliance, like on the front end, right, so that folks aren't getting into difficult situations with contractors who have whatever issues. And so the new system, are applicants, I guess, entering that information themselves about the license, or is that something that's pulled down directly from the CSLB's database and it's sort of just automatically filled in?
So the information is pulled directly from the CSLB data set. So the applicant would be, you know, start entering the information. We can choose which terms by which they can search, and then they would select the correct contractor, and we're pulling in key information from the state license board that then become part of the application. We're actually also pulling information not just from the state license board, but also DBI's existing databases that are sort of joined with the CSLB number, and so all of that is additional information is collected automatically and cannot be changed by the customer in the form.
And so if you're the applicant and you're applying, say, for a bathroom remodel or something, and you're putting in a license, and it's like a classification for, you know, electrical or whatever. That's kind of messed up, right? Is it going to tell you, like, hey, that's messed up, you shouldn't do that, don't go with that guy?
Actually, they won't be able to, in that instance, they won't be able to find that contractor, and we'll have a notification. If your contractor is not listed, they could either, you know, not be an active contractor, or they might have the incorrect license type. So we would give an alert to somebody or instructions as to what to do if they couldn't find it. But for example, when we get to the electrical permits, or even for some of the fire permits, we will be filtering that list of the full data set to just be the license type that are allowed for that specific permit type.
Okay. And then I guess a similar question on workers' comp, right? So a lot of contractors will list themselves as exempt from workers' comp, right? And so you're putting in, like, hey, I'm going to do this big project, and I've got a contractor who swears they have no employees at all. That also seems like a problem. Will it also kind of give you a flag there, or?
Yeah, so we'll be pulling in the workers' comp information from what the state has. I think that there is business decisions from DBI's team as to whether they want certain information to be blockers, or whether staff will, you know, do more research on what is provided by the state license board. But yeah, that information will automatically be pulled in and won't be able to be edited by the contractor within the form application.
Okay. And then I don't know if it was in there. Maybe this is just a suggestion if you're taking suggestions. CSLB has started, but not with everybody, putting in the occupation classifications of the comp that they're holding, right? So, like, and especially with dual classifications, it's a big deal. So if that could be sort of integrated into there, if it's not already, I think that would be really important to show that, like, actually, like, you know, they do have, you know, carpenters who are, you know, paid at a certain level, and that's why their compensation is workers' comp is this. And then just a comment on that page, on the licensed contractor page on the bottom, you have workmen's comp, and that's going to make some people really upset.
Thank you for the call out and for the suggestions. That's really helpful, and we'll definitely make edits. We're still early on, so
sure.
Plenty of time. Thank you.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Shelley.
Thank you, Liz and Darcy and your team, for this amazing experience. I was walking through page by page, and curiosity is, what are the language access capabilities for someone who's monolingual, who is complete newbie for the first time applying to this? And I notice a lot of required fields, like asterisks to every blank fill. Let's just say I get super frustrated. So twofold question. One is language access capabilities for someone who's monolingual, and how long that tutorial might be, and who they can call in the midway if I'm having frustration applying to this and then I get stuck. Who can I call directly right away to help me fill this out completely in a timely manner, and to follow up on timeline with staff as well?
I think we'll do tag team on some answers here. I would say on the, if you get stuck and you've exhausted all the resources that we're building in, and I'll let Darcy talk about sort of the resources we're building into the system, I'd say two different tools to have, because we know our customers, no matter how easy we try to make this, people, it's still a tough process. One would be Katie Tang's Office of Small Business Customer Support Team. Although I don't know if they've actually rebranded, I still always refer to it as the Office of Small Business. They really are growing into customer support for applicants. They do an incredible job with both language access and helping people really navigate what process they're going to need and walking people through systems. So we really do see that they are going to become a huge support network for especially the business community. But I think our long-term vision and goal would be that team could grow and help both residential and commercial applicants. Secondly, we also have a robust group of folks at the Permit Center, our customer service team that's run by the Permit Center. Right now, they're sort of playing air traffic control and support and customer service in person. We are anticipating that that team will also become digital support for folks who either want to come in and are maybe still feel more comfortable with that human in-person interaction, where they'll be able to come in, talk to somebody. Somebody will walk them through the pages, kind of be able to explain them. And we have culturally competent staff that's, you know, speak of all of our core languages on staff to help walk people through. So that would be available as well. And then thirdly, we do have customer service email support, where typically that's the first way to engage with staff. And that can obviously lead to either a Teams call, a phone call, just an email, depending on what their question are. But we've got a whole customer service support team via email. So I think we've got sort of a multi-pronged approach in more of a human interaction way. But we are also building out some robust tools and features to make it easy for linguistically competent tools for folks as well. And I'll let Darcy talk on those.
Yeah, just on the technical side, the OpenGov is all using Google Translate, and so it will be translated, and it defaults to the device's preferred language. So, all of the information that's on there will be translated. Thanks.
I have some questions. One of the issues we have seen, even recently, has been that a contractor will list an engineer of record who actually is not working on the project. When somebody's username or somebody gets tagged in the system, will they get some kind of notification that they've been added to a project or a permit? And is there a way for them to be like, nope, not me, that's not correct? And this is unfortunately more common than we would like.
Yes, so any guest to a project account, so whether that's the person filling it out can add guests, whether that's a contractor, an engineer, an architect, or just somebody to help, you know, paralegal helping with it. When they're added as a guest to that account, they get an automatic email alert.
Okay.
So if somebody was added and they're like, I am not part of this project, they will for sure get an unusual email saying, why have I been added to this project? So those alerts are built in.
Okay, and that's for user accounts. Do you need to have a user account when you're adding like a contractor or the engineer record in if it's not you?
I believe I'll ask for confirmation, but I think anyone can be added in to that, even if they don't have an OpenGov account. But one of the required fields is an email address.
Okay.
So you can't just put the person's name and their license in. You have to add a certain pieces of information, and then that triggers them getting an email saying they've been added.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would say just in general, too, I think one of the great things is the system isn't so firm that we can't tweak these things. So if, for example, you know, we feel at some point in time we really need to add like a phone number box,
mm-hmm.
and some tools like that, like those are the really easy things that make it more nimble to add in this. So if we find that something is going awry, again, we probably will miss something. I think that's sort of the expectation anytime you're rolling out technology. If we get something wrong, if we miss something, if we realize we need to add some different element, super nimble system to be able to make those adjustments as we're learning and iterating on it.
I think that point that you just made about the being able to actually adjust the system continuously is actually one of the most important points of this and of the system rollouts. So many times we have a system that is just really difficult to change. So I'm really I'm very hopeful. Yeah. I'm excited about that. Thank you. We talked a little bit about the audit trail, and one of the things that comes before us is like, oh, the special inspection was skipped, or something was issued when it shouldn't have. Obviously, we've heard in public comment like they're supposed to be. We don't have good data in our current systems, so therefore we can't just automatically close out anything that we think is probably overdue and should be closed out. Protections, I guess, will you build into the system? And then what does data integration look like, or data transfer look like?
So a couple items. So I think first and foremost, building the system, we're getting to make a lot of these decisions. So right now, again, we're working with pretty easy scopes that don't have terribly robust inspections. But let's just say hypothetically we get to the stage where we're doing new construction and there are multiple steps that are needed in that inspection. For that record type, we will map out in a room with the inspectors and the subject matter experts what should be consistently the right steps that happen for this type of project? Is there always, you know, A, B, and C steps? We will build that in, and that will be the forced steps that an inspector has to take. Supervisor, there will be user permissions of a certain level of user who will be the only ones who are able to make any changes to that. That too will have an audit log, so that will be tracked that that change was made. Again, we know that most of the rules are most of the time required, but we also know that there are some unique cases where we need to be able to make some adjustments, but we want to make sure that those adjustments are A, very controlled by senior level people with the permissions to do so, and that those are tracked and held accountable. So we're mapping it in from the get-go, and then when inspectors are in the field, they will not have the ability to override steps. So they will need to document that that step is completed. Again, I think we're really excited about actually the photo feature, because I do think a lot of the work, I know at least thinking again from the planning perspective, a picture's worth a thousand words, to be able to show that this step happened. And so we're building those steps in. I'll hand it over to Darcy to talk about sort of the any data integration. But I will say, because I think this dovetails nicely into sort of Jerry's presentation, so much of what we're focused on through this system is to address the very issues that he's raising. So the system will be able to set reports and do automation. Again, business decisions we need to make around what those rules are, but if we want emails to automatically go to every permit holder 1 month before their permit is set to expire, we can set those rules across the board, so we don't need to be tracking each one. The system knows expiration date is X minus 1 month, send email. And so we'll be able to do that. We'll then be able to run a report on those and be able to act on those and make different business decisions. So again, it sort of opens sort of blows our minds at what all the options might be able to be in terms of new business rules that we want to have around this. And I think that's something certainly we'll look, I'm sure Patrick will be looking to this commission of what we want those business rules to be. But the technology will no longer be our limiter.
It's really exciting. Thank you.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add to what Liz mentioned is that while the information is visible and that whole audit log can be seen within OpenGov, and actually really any data about the applications, they have their own reporting module, but also they have an API. So if we want to pull that data out and, you know, use a different type of tool to analyze that data, that's definitely possible. And if the information isn't set in the API already, we can always work with OpenGov to, you know, the data is there, we can extract it, and we'll be able to access all of it. Yeah.
Thank you. Just looking through my kind of list of will we be able to assign and then also easily switch? Like, will the supervisor be able to assign inspectors to their jurisdictions? Because we have rules on the expanded compliance list about, like, you're out of inspection or it has to be done by a supervisor. Like, how will that be done?
So we have options there. We can set it up, and actually the fire department does inspection assignment a little differently than DBI. So we can set it up to be automatically based on information like a district, for example. We can set it so that it goes to a senior and then the senior assigns then to the next person. Or we can kind of, some teams like to have sort of a view of all of the upcoming work and assign it from there. So we have options and are working with each team to figure out what makes most sense for their team.
Yeah. You can have actually a different logic for each department.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Nothing else? Well, the system looks fantastic. Thank you for all your work. We'd love to have you back, and good luck on the next couple weeks. Those are big ones. I guess just my final question is, for members of the public who are kind of waiting for this to come online, like, what does the notification period look like? What does the user rollout look like? You know, how will folks know that it's ready to go?
Sure.
Sure. So we are really excited that we are actually going to be starting testing with real customers in January. We're going to be actually using four different types of customer testing. I think one is just making sure that it's very, very clear what customers are supposed to do, how to use the system. We're going to do some testing, what we're calling frustration and pain points. What you saw is what we call the happy path, which is like the application goes through pretty easily. We know not every application is going to work like that. So we're also going to be working with customers, testing, understanding where are they getting stuck? How can we be making this clearer? We're also going to be making sure that expectations, number three, in communication are very, very clear because we know so much of this is going to be very new. This is something we haven't changed in so many years. And so having those customer education sessions as well as testing sessions, that's all going to be happening in January. Then, as folks know, our launch milestone is going to be February 13th, but we are going to be starting what we're calling soft launching early in February so that folks can actually be getting their hands on the system on a broader spectrum of customers can be getting their hands on the system. And again, looking at what the pain points are, if there's really, really big flags or issues that we're noticing so that by that week of February 13th, we're really ready to go. But what I also want to emphasize is that this is a really iterative process, right? We're going to start talking to customers in January. We're going to do a lot more rollout in February, but it's not going to be crystal perfect for everybody on day one, but that is why this is a really nimble system. That is why OpenGov is here to partner with us throughout the next 3 years so that we can be learning and building the system that really meets customer needs.
Sounds great. Well, we look to having you back for, you know, for the lessons learned and what's next and, you know, hearing about, you know, how the rollout has been. So thank you so much and really good luck to you.
Thank you, everyone. Next, we have item five, Director's Report, 5A, Director's Update. I'm sorry. No, we have to do the Director will verbally do it.
Good afternoon, President Alexander Toot and members of the Building Inspection Commission. I'm Patrick O'Riordan, Department of Building Inspection Director. First, I want to say thank you to President Alexander Toot and Commissioner Lee for joining us at our recent holiday party. It was great for you to be there and celebrate with us, with me and with the staff. I really appreciate that. As this is our final meeting of 2025, I want to do a quick review of what we accomplished over the past year and give you a look ahead on how we plan to further improve our service in the coming year. The biggest change was Mayor Lurie's creation of Permit SF, of the Permit SF initiative and leadership team. I've been part of the Permit SF team from the start and have been impressed with everything we've accomplished, including the work to replace the permit tracking system that you just heard about. The mayor's embrace of permit reform gave new steam to the operational improvements we've been making over the past 5 years. Our customers see the change and feel optimistic about our efforts, and with good reason. At DBI this year, we made a number of important improvements to better serve the public. We started the year by launching a new building permit and comprehensive application report and enabling simultaneous plan review by all city departments. We got rid of physical stamps on in-house review building permits and streamlined application routing. We removed the school district from the routing process altogether. At the same time, we expanded the public counter hours at the Permit Center and DBI and eliminated the information counter to save customers a step in the process. We created a working group to study the San Francisco Building Code and identify opportunities for streamlining. This led to successful legislation reforming slope protection, driveway load, and lighting requirements to start. Our code enforcement team eliminated a 2-year backlog of code enforcement directors hearing that had built up during COVID.
We added all housing inspection notices of violation to the property records in the public complaint tracking system to improve transparency and provide access to the public. Our continuity of operations plan was updated to ensure we can serve the public after a disaster. Last week, we launched a concrete building screening program. Another big accomplishment was to fix the city's addressing process. We worked with other city departments to launch a new comprehensive addressing life cycle process that saved applicants an average of 8 days compared to earlier this year. Finally, we streamlined the legislation process for existing unpermitted security gates. Taken together, these efforts continue to reduce our permit review and issuance time. Today, the majority of over-the-counter permits are issued within 2 days, and our teams are completing their first review targets for in-house projects 2 to 3 times more often than just 3 years ago. Of course, we still have plenty of work to do, and we're going to keep at it in 2026. I'm proud of the progress that we've made and want to thank you for your support, partnership, and leadership as we strive to improve our department and provide even better service to the public. Thank you. That concludes my director's report, and I'm available for any questions you may have. And I want to also mention, I wish you all a happy holiday season as we're just be at that time.
Thank you. Next is 5B, update on permit SF shot clock. SFGov, can we share the screen, the slides? Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. Megan Wall, Data and Performance Manager at DBI. And I'm pleased to share an update on our progress with the permit SF shot clocks. Next slide.
Sorry, it's a slight delay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is just a reminder of our targets. We are looking to hold our in-house issuance, building permit issuance time to see steady improvement. For over-the-counter building permit issuance, we'd like to hold at a median of 1 calendar day. We want to have completeness letters issued within 20 calendar days, 75% of the time, first comments issued in 30 calendar days, 75% of the time, and responses to revisions issued in 14 calendar days, 75% of the time. Next slide. Okay. As you can see here, our median issuance time for in-house permits continues to drop and is lower when comparing to the past year to the past month. These numbers are also lower than what I presented at the last meeting, so we continue to make progress. Next slide. While we are seeing an improvement in the timeliness of application reviews compared to the year as a whole, we did see a dip in the percent meeting the completeness check target of 21 calendar days, and we are looking into potential reasons for that. But overall, we continue to see improvement with our review benchmarks for in-house permits. And that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next, we have 5C, update on proposed or recently enacted state or local legislation.
Good morning, Commissioners. Tate Hanna, Legislative Affairs Manager. Next slide, please. So of the ordinances that have been recently enacted, we had our 2025 building code, which included the plumbing code, mechanical code, electrical code, green building code, existing building code, our San Francisco building code, and then our housing code got an update as well. That was passed and signed by the mayor, and those will take effect come January 1st. Next slide, please. Just two ordinances before the Board of Supervisors. File number 251024, which is related to hydrogen fueling station infrastructure and installation. That is pending a hearing at the Land Use Committee that will likely take place in January. And then next is file number 250811, which you may recall changes our building permit application and building permit timelines. That recently passed the Board of Supervisors, just had its second reading yesterday, passed with a vote of 7-4. And so I will be looking for the mayor's signature likely this week before that takes effect. As a reminder on that ordinance, there's a 6-month delay for the department to work in our back end any updates that we need to make sure that everything is smooth when it's rolled out for the customer. Next slide, please. Brief update on the legislative calendar for the state legislature. January 1st, statutes will take effect unless an urgency clause has been applied to any law. On January 5th, the legislature reconvenes. On the 10th, the budget must be submitted by the governor. On the 16th is the last day for policy committees to hear and report bills introduced in their house in 2025 to the Appropriations Committee. So those are two-year bills. This is sort of their last chance to get anything out. And on January 23rd, it's the last day for any committee to hear and report bills introduced in 2025 in their house to the floor. So any sort of last vestigial bills will be pushed through in these early weeks of January. And then lastly, they'll be passed on January 31st for any bills introduced in that house in 2025. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Next is item 5D, update on DBI's finances.
Good morning, Commissioners. Alex Koskinen, Deputy Director, Administration. I have what I was told to keep a very brief update on what to expect from monthly financial reporting, a little bit about the budget calendar, and our monthly regular financial report. So what to expect for financial reporting? Most updates will just be regular financial update. How much money have we received versus our budget? How much have we spent? And some special notable updates will be in September when the previous fiscal year is closed. We'll give a final update and recap. Twice a year, we do comprehensive projecting at 6 months and 9 months through the fiscal year. We do that for the controller's office and mayor's office, and so we present the results here. In January and February, there are two required public meetings regarding the department's budget, and so we will share that with you. And then other things as needed. Sometimes the month will move back or forward a month or two, but this is generally what to expect. Next slide, please. For the budget schedule, it generally begins in December. So on Friday, the mayor just released their policy instructions for the next two budget years. I can either provide a short summary now. There's nothing really that impacts DBI specifically, or wait until January if anybody has questions. The budget system is now open until February, where the department builds its proposed budget for the next 2 years. We will present what we have so far in the January meeting. That will be the first meeting. We will show you what fees we have calculated so far and any changes to revenues and expenditures. There will be no action for the commission in that January meeting, just questions and answers. Then in the second budget meeting, which has to be scheduled, I believe, 2 weeks or 1 week before the mandated budget submission, department budget submission on February 21st, there's a second budget meeting where we will present as close to the final budget as we have. Sometimes there are changes in the last few days. I believe the commission streamlining will have a small effect on the BIC and their role in the budget submission. Deputy City Attorney, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe currently the commission is required to approve passage or submission of the department's proposed budget to the board and the mayor. And after the streamlining takes effect, if it does, it will be similar to how other legislation is, where the BIC just needs to see it and opine on it, yes or no. Then After, when the department submits its budget on February 21st, it becomes the mayor's phase of the budget. Departments are kicked out of the budget system, and the mayor's office makes their technical and policy decisions. Often they work very closely with departments. Sometimes they don't always tell us everything they're doing until the budget is released, but we do typically work very closely with them. The mayor then releases their proposed budget publicly on June 1st. Then it becomes the Board of Supervisors phase of the budget, where they hold hearings, where the departments go and explain their budgets and priorities. And then the budget and legislative analyst proposes adjustments to the budget, typically always cuts. And anything the Board of Supervisors cannot increase the size of the budget from what the mayor has proposed, but anything that the board cuts, they can add back for different purposes. And so that's a whole public process where they determine their priorities and the public comes in and requests and they give a list of what they've added back. And then end of June, July, the full board votes on the final budget, and then it goes to the mayor for a signature. The mayor could veto, and the board could override with a two-thirds vote, but that has not happened in recent history. And that is the nuts and bolts of the budget process. And then it starts all over again next year. And one important thing to note, the budget is for two fiscal years, but it is revisited every year. So year two of the budget becomes year one of the next budget. So every year is revisited. Next slide, please. A financial update to the OpenGov meeting on the finance side. So the mayor's office signed a contract with OpenGov to modernize city permitting and software systems. We have been told, and this is still being determined and nothing is set in stone yet, but it's estimated that the OpenGov will be phased in over 3 years with an approximate implementation cost of about $15 million. The department share of the funding will be determined by utilization. So the mayor's office has collected an estimate of how many user accounts each department will have and then is using that share of user accounts as the percentage that each department should fund. So our estimated share of cost is about a third, so 290 out of 884 licenses. This will likely change, and then at the end of the project, it will be trued up, and so each department will pay its actual cost. So far, DBI was a department that had funding set aside for PTS replacement a number of years ago. So we have been directed to fund a large portion of the first phase. So we've been directed to make $5.5 million available in this current fiscal year. We've received one invoice so far from OpenGov, and we have paid $4.7 million. The mayor's office is taking the lead on validating project milestones and directing payments, who pays when. Next slide. The rest is the regular monthly update. So at the end of November, we're 5 months, 42% of the way through the year. We've collected about 46% of our charge for services revenue. These are primarily building permit revenues, and we're a little bit ahead of where we need to be. These aren't perfectly linear throughout the year. There's some volatility, but it's generally a good indicator of where we are, so that's good news. And then we have spent 37% of our budget. This is a lot more volatile. We tend to get pay things later, so this is not as good of a measure, but we are definitely on track for some modest savings. We're working right now on our six-month budget projections, so we'll have that next month. Next slide. Here are the revenue figures. You can see revenues by category, our budget, and our actuals so far. Next slide. Same thing for expenditures. This is everything that we have budgeted and spent so far, And the projections are all set at budget for now, but we will update those next month. Next slide. So far, the number of permits that we have issued year to date is very close to the number for the same period last year. However, valuation is 16% higher, so that is, I think, primarily what is responsible for the growth in revenue that we've seen. This is good news. It's nobody has a crystal ball, but from what I hear, things are promising. The overall country and economy, there's some maybe cloudiness there. We don't know, but at least locally, we've heard that projects are starting to move, and there's some optimism that our revenues could continue to stay high. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, do you have any questions?
Okay, thank you. Is there public comment on the director's report, items 5A through D? I'm seeing none in person and none remotely. Did someone have a comment? No comments, questions. Okay, thank you. The next is item 6, commissioners' questions and matters. Inquiries to staff at this time. Commissioners may make inquiries to staff regarding various documents, policies, practices, and procedures which are of interest to the commission. And B, future meeting and agendas. At this time, the commission may discuss and take action to set the date of a special meeting and or determine those items that could be placed on the agenda of the next meeting and other future meetings of the Building Inspection Commission. And the next regular meeting will be on January 21st, 2026. And are there any future agenda items? No. Okay, no future agenda items. Commissioners can contact me if there is something at a later date. Next is item 7, review and approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of November 14th, 2025.
So moved.
And who gave the motion? Okay, well, President Lillard, too. Thank you. And the second was Commissioner Newman. Is there any public comment on the minutes? Are all commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Then the minutes are approved. Thank you. We did in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And item 8 is adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I just want to wish everyone a happy new year and happy holidays, and thank you everyone for your hard work this year. It's been really a fantastic year, and I hope you're very proud of all of our accomplishments together. So thank you for your partnership.
Hey, thank you.